Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Web Sleuths Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith, the very proud owner of WebSleuths.com. With me tonight is Bessie, my producer who does all the heavy listening. And tonight, it's going to be kind of a sad show, but very, very interesting. This is not one you want to miss. Because let's face it, we all loved Joni, didn't we? Forget about Chachi. Forget, and that guy's just he's a jerk. We loved Joni from Happy Days. And everybody loved Erin Moran, especially the people that worked with her and knew her. Now, when she died a few days ago, we all thought the worst. Raise your hand if everybody thought, oh, drug overdose. In fact, that was even reported some media outlets. When in reality, Erin passed away from stage 4 cancer that she found out she had in November. It was very, very aggressive and took everybody by surprise, even her husband, I believe. And tonight, we're going to talk to somebody who is a former child star. He's now an activist and absolutely one of the sweetest people on this planet, Mr. Paul Peterson. Now, you remember Paul from the Donna Reed Show. He played her son, Jeffrey. Paul's job now is helping people. If you've ever read Paul's Facebook page, he is always reaching out and doing something for somebody and patiently answering questions from drooling groupies like me. Yes, I'm one of those groupies of Paul Peterson. I love this man. But seriously, Paul is quite the activist when it comes to child actors. And Mr. Peterson, welcome to Web Sleuths Radio. I'm so delighted you're with us tonight.
Well, thank you, Tricia. Gosh, you got me blushing here. I tell you what, you call me Paul and I'll call you Tricia and we'll be fine.
That sounds absolutely perfect. Now, before we get into Erin and how all of that went down and what her life was like, let's talk a little bit about what you are into. This all started, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Peterson, this all started, Paul, sorry,
better.
Jackie Coogan. I'll remember sometime when Jackie Coogan was in a Charlie Chaplin film, and Jackie Coogan's parents took all his money, just stole it, and that prompted California law changes. Is that correct?
Well, yes, in terms of the law. The first statutes in California, which remember that this is the home of Hollywood, which was the movie business, and Jackie Cooper was called the world's boy king. That's how successful and popular he was. And the promise made publicly by his mom and dad was that he'd be very rich when he turned 21, then the age of majority. Trouble was, his career was over, he turned 21, and there was no money. And he did the unthinkable. He sued his mother. By that time, his father had passed. And California was so embarrassed that this world-famous young actor had no money that they passed the Coogan Law, which was meant to protect high-profile kids. And in large measure, it did, the Shirley Temples and the Judy Garlands. But only those kids who had long-term contracts. That law came into effect in 1938. The Coogan Law, incidentally, also protected me on a long-running series because I had a long-term contract. But over the years, the industry changed, and the Coogan Law began to cover fewer and fewer very famous kids. And it got to a point where only about 5% of working children were covered by the law, and mind you, only in the state of California. So we have a lot of work to do. Just to kind of give you a background to understand why I'm so vocal about my advocacy. The children
yes,
in the
please.
Entertainment business, as well as the children in agriculture, are exempt from federal child labor laws. So this whole myth that children in the business are protected is just that, a myth. If you work in California under California laws, yep, you're pretty well protected. Mandatory studio teacher, mandatory set aside for savings. But if you work someplace else, like, say, North Carolina, you're doomed.
Mm-hmm. And because there are no laws to protect those children, right? They can just come in and pay the parents, and the parents will never, ever have to see the child again, correct? See the
that
money.
Is correct.
The child will never have to see the
and
money
And that
again.
Happens. And worse than that, imagine if outside of America. Now, I'm going to walk to the other room and grab another phone, since this one is telling me it's getting low, but we have made the transfer. Yeah, no problem.
Okay, good.
Here I am.
Good. Good. All right. Fantastic. So you're all safe and sound and charged up, right?
I am. I'm sorry about the long-winded explanation, but the fact is that there are so many people who don't understand that the rules, in fact, do not protect children and are often on the books for the profit of the producers.
That is just, it's terrible. You would think this day and age that would have changed by now, especially since it all started back with Jackie Coogan. Let me ask you, being on the Donna Reed Show for as long as you were, did your parents handle your money correctly, do you feel?
Oh, I do. Well, look, nobody beat me up and nobody stole my money. I was working in a wonderful environment with Donna Reed and Carl Betts and Shelley Fabre. I had a wonderful studio teacher for all 8 years, even when they didn't need to supply me with a tutor. They did the last 3 years of the show. But the circumstances themselves are very difficult for young people because, guess what, the show comes to an end. And if you're not ready for the next adventure, you're vulnerable.
And that means, especially if you have to go back to public school, here you are kind of the center of attention and you're isolated. And all of a sudden, Paul Peterson, you're isolated with this wonderful family, and this family goes away. And there I'm sure, all kinds of mental gymnastics that your brain is doing trying to deal with this departure of your family. How did you handle it?
I was 20. I was 20 when the Donna Reed Show came to an end. And so I was in the midst of doing that transition from a bubblegum star to being a young adult. But this is how brutal it can be. Danny Bonaducci was with his family on vacation and came back to the studio assuming the show had been picked up, the Partridge Family. And they got to the gate, and the studio guard would not let the family drive on the lot. And when Danny's mother said, well, why not? The guard said the following: the Partridge Family doesn't live here anymore. That's how brutal it can be. And so Danny, thinking he was going back to work, ended up being thrust back into the public school system of Los Angeles. That is an unpleasant experience, you can believe me.
I can understand. And Danny Bonaducci, I actually knew somebody that worked with him for quite a while. She ended up having to go to literally a psychiatrist for years to recover. But he did not have a good home life. His father was, I guess, just very brutal to him and did not have a good home life. And I think we all saw that in Breaking Bonaducci, that show that was on a few years ago. And the guy's just a mess. But you know what?
Yes,
he has a good work ethic. He really
does.
He went out there. Go ahead.
You know, he's got a radio show in Seattle, and he does very well. I admire his talent. But, boy, there was a lot of carnage in his life.
Yes, there was. He did. He even went – this is what type of work ethic he had. He had a really good work ethic. He actually went and was hired to hang from a pear tree and get a partridge in a pear tree, and he did it. You know, he was a waiter. He washed dishes. He did whatever it took. He lived out of his car. I know. That is just too funny. So the guy has a great work ethic.
I remember an interview he did with Oprah just as after the arrest in Arizona for consorting with a transvestite. And she said to him, Danny, is it true that they found you naked in a closet? And he said, Oprah, I wasn't naked in a closet with a chimp. He's definitely a funny man. But I wish him well. He's got a new wife, and life is okay for him up in the Pacific Northwest.
Good. And, you know, it's obvious just from what we know as the public, he went through a living hell. And his Danny Bonaducci story is not one that is just that is an abnormal story. It's more usually
no, it's not.
Stories are more like Danny's. We're talking with Paul Peterson. Paul Peterson, you will remember from the Donna Reed Show. He played Donna's son Jeffrey, and Paul is now an activist for child actors. Now, you help create a foundation, an organization.
Yes.
Tell us about A Minor Consideration.
Well, it's kind of an interesting story, and I'll try to be brief. I was writing my, it would have been my 16th book called A Minor Consideration, which was meant to be sort of a compendium of all of the kid actor stories that I had known. And in the middle of it, my friend Jay North, who played Dennis the Menace, was having serious psychological problems and threatening to kill people, beginning with John Landon, the director who was on that misbegotten film Twilight Zone that killed Vic Morrow and the two kid actors. But he he wasn't the only person in trouble. Danny Bonaducci had been fired from another job. Drew Barrymore was writing a tell-all recording. Dana Plato, Todd Bridges was in jail. In any case, it was a terrible environment. And I said to my wife, look, we got to do something about this. And I put the book aside and started making phone calls in and around Hollywood, which finally wanted to listen and wanted to help. And before I knew it, the four or five people that Ron and I thought we were going to help became 40 and then 400, and suddenly I was involved in union politics and taking over the Young Performers Committee, formalizing A Minor Consideration. And it's astonishing what you learn when you set out just to help other people.
Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you found out that this was a very large group of people that needed more help.
Oh, it was so much larger than I had tried to limit it just to the kids who had gotten famous, you know, the kind of Natalie Woods, Shirley Temples. But it kept getting bigger and bigger, because what we discovered was that even though you may not have achieved fame, the same dynamics, the same forces were eroding the parent-child relationship and your sense of self. So suddenly it wasn't just the 300 or 400 kids every year who have, you know, really high-profile jobs in movies and television and in the recording industry. What about those thousands of kids who never get the job, yet put in just as much time, go to just as many auditions, and got nothing to show for it?
Parents forcing them to do it, very, very damaging.
Oftentimes.
Very damaging.
Oftentimes, yes. And it's hard for a kid who grows up in a family where success in show business is important to look at his parents, usually just a single parent, and say, I've had enough. No more interviews. They ain't going anymore.
So what did you start to do for these child actors? Let me back up.
Sure.
Please go ahead. You're much more interesting than I am. Please continue.
Oh, thank you, Trish. It's a phenomenal saga. What we began to discover is not only were there common threads, but we started to identify areas in the law and draw in psychologists so that we could start getting people the help they needed, whether it was renewing a driver's license or getting them into rehab when they had no resources, or most important of all, sitting down in a room with 10 or 12 other former kid stars to find out, like a group therapy session, that we had a lot of things in common. And some of us had gone down the road a little bit further and were able to say, hey, you can survive this. I know it's going to be tough. It'll be embarrassing. Doing a personal inventory is never pleasant. But you see, Tricia, we're not welcome in places like Alcoholics Anonymous because there's nothing anonymous about our life. Can you imagine when you go to, a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and before you get home, there are messages on your answering machine? Hey, we saw you at the NA meeting.
Oh, God, that would be awful. That would be just awful.
Then you get the press coverage.
Imagine.
And
yeah.
That's
and
been
here
happening.
All you want is help.
Well, look how it happened with Erin Moran. Here's a gal diagnosed with cancer in December of last year, which is going to kill her, and the immediate reaction on the internet was, well, let's harken back to her known alcohol problems. Well, she had put that behind her and any suspicions of illegal drugs, and yet the first reaction of the general population was, oh, this has got to be drugs or alcohol. Well, what it was a fast-spreading cancer that killed her.
Mm-hmm. I mean, nobody thought that. You're right. Everybody did jump to that conclusion. In fact, people were starting to lash out at people like yourself and Ron Howard saying, why didn't you do more? And you said, I only quote this, we did our best with Erin. Now let's talk about Erin Moran for a moment.
Sure.
She, very popular, did Joni Loves Chachi and all of that, and then she disappeared. And then pretty soon, 15 years later, you see pictures of her in the Enquirer, and she looks like a mess. She's living in a trailer court. Nothing wrong living in a trailer court, but it's a far cry from living in Hollywood. What happened to her? Is Erin Moran's saga kind of the typical saga of people raised in the Hollywood system?
Well, it's not just raised in the Hollywood systems. It's young people who come to prominence within the system, because it's hard for even an adult to sustain a career in show business. And when you fall, it is a long way down. And there are a whole bunch of people out there who used to beg for your autograph and clamor for interviews, just waiting to put the knife in your back. Oh, look at this. She doesn't have her money anymore. She has to sue the producers for her merchandising money. That's pretty cruel. And, you know, humans aren't built to take that kind of abuse, that endless abuse. And in Erin's case, here's the very interesting thing. All of this transpired during the growth of influence of our group of former kid stars. And Erin never lost contact with our gang, particularly Allison Arngrim, and John Provost and his wife, Lori, or with Steve Wishnoff. I mean, she was together with our gang in, I believe it was November of last year, on doing a television show. And, of course, we always saw her at memorabilia conventions, because for us, that's a lot of fun. It's like getting together with your classmates from high school. In any event, all of a sudden, there was a break in communications, and we started to get concerned about the 1st of February thereabouts, you know, beginning to make phone calls within the membership saying, hey, has anybody talked to Erin? What's going on? Has anybody called Steve? And as his letter amply demonstrated, which we finally posted publicly so people could see the saga, that she had this terrible diagnosis, and even though she was doing radiation and chemo, she was way behind this very aggressive cancer. And before you knew it, she couldn't, and it was throat cancer, so she couldn't talk. But she could still text and tweet. And finally, and rather suddenly, even by Steve's account, last Saturday, he came back from the market and laid down next to her. And an hour later, she was gone.
That quick. But what
that
happened
quick,
to Erin? She, like I said, we saw these very, you know, unflattering pictures of her and stories of her getting into trouble. And what was going on?
Well, she was trying to find her way, and it's hard to pick up a new identity when the industry is not hiring you. You know, sometimes you're just one job away from salvation. Well, for her, the job didn't come. And the press, they prey on people like her. Here, an attractive gal who all of a sudden is a mess. It's like the constant use of police mugshots that they do to celebrities. The most unflattering they can find. Well, look, it was a very tough role for her publicly. She's a talented girl and quite beautiful. But then in 1992, she met her husband, Steve, and, you know, life kind of turned around for her personally. But the trouble was, Steve was not a high-profile guy, and his mother was having a difficult time, and suddenly she was out of Hollywood.
Right, in Indiana. Do you know why, and this is a question that you were getting, I saw on Facebook, which was unfair, because this is, it's not like you didn't try and help her. It's unfair of people to expect you to give her a job and take care of her personally. But mm-hmm. people have been asking, why didn't Ron Howard say, hey, Aaron, I've got this great part for you here with Tom Hanks or, Henry Winkler. Why didn't he give her a part into something? I've heard people go ahead.
Well, Tricia, I can't speak for Ron or Henry other than to tell you they knew of her condition and had tried. And I must tell you, after doing this for 40 years now, 40 years I've been doing this since Walt, Mickey, and Me came out, which was my 10th book in 1977. You can, in fact, burn every bridge. You can wear people out, including those closest to you. Your own parents can turn their back on you if you can't get your act together. And any person out there who is listening, who has a troubled person within their family, knows exactly what I'm talking about. How many trips to rehab can you make? How many second, third, fourth, fifth chances do you make? But here, let me tell you something hopeful. A minor consideration never gives up. We always answer the phone. Our record with a person within our group is 7 rehabs. But we still pick up the phone, and she's doing much better now.
Yeah, well, it was just such a tragedy to see that happen. Everybody thought it was another Dana Plato. And let's talk about Dana here. She ended up robbing a dry cleaner, if I remember correctly.
She was working in a dry cleaner and robbed a video store. Well, that was part of that downward spiral. But let me tell you something, why we're proud of some of the work we did. Dana was languishing in jail and had been there 10 days, and we did not have the funds to go rescue her. We had nobody in Las Vegas, we thought. And one day, Wayne Newton walked into that Las Vegas police station and put down $1,400 and bailed her. And when I asked him why he did it, he said, hey, I was a kid actor. I understand.
Oh, that's great. She did have some chances, but I wasn't sure if she actually killed herself or if it was an accidental overdose. I can't remember. Do you remember what happened with her, Paul?
She was found with lots of drugs in her stomach. But people who medicate self-medicate themselves with dangerous substances can kill themselves. They can do it, either hanging themselves or inadvertent combinations of drugs. I've kind of seen all of this stuff happen, and nearly always they didn't mean to do it that day. It's just something that happened. I had to remind people. I remember going on a national show and saying, look, in the end, Dana Plato, as beautiful as she was, died as a drug addict who had lost custody of her own child and was living in Oklahoma. And that tells you about a wasted life. Dana was given second, third, and fourth chances, and we were there for her. But if a person is bent on writing their life as a tragedy, there is nothing any of us can do to stop it.
That is absolutely right. Those words are golden. We're talking with Paul Peterson. You all remember Paul. He was a cute, gorgeous son on the Donna Reed Show. He played Jeffrey Stone. And how many books have you written? I started to get a list together, and I thought, this is just too many.
I've written 16 altogether. Some are action adventure, and some are scholarly work. Some a book on automobiles. But the book that is most important in my life was Walt, Mickey, and Me, which Dell published in 1977. When I took my first hard look at the lives of young performers, because I was one of the original Mouseketeers. and I'm still friends with all the kids, but as I tell people in the book, my distinction in that regard is that I am the world's first ex-Mouseketeer because I'm the first kid they fired.
Oh, did they fire you? Why?
Conduct unbecoming a mouse.
Oh, my gosh. What did you do, Paul? You've got to confess.
Everything. Everything. I was a 9-year-old boy. I'd much rather play baseball and catch and go climb up ladders than dance and sing and prance around.
So how long were you on the Mickey Mouse Show?
I was there for 7 weeks, long enough to help open Disneyland back in 1955, and then I was gone. But by that time,
were
here's the
parents?
Funny
part. Yes. Oh, no, go ahead.
The funny
please,
part
please
about
continue.
This, I already had gotten an agent. And even though I had been discharged from the Mouseketeers, they weren't on the air yet, and I was already booking national commercials. So,
God.
It was a good thing that I lost that job.
So your parents weren't angry then at your misbehaving?
Well, I can't say that, but I was the one
okay.
who was most mortified. You know, when you come from a blue-collar family, the only answer to losing a job is to get another one. And, boy,
right.
I got my share and then some.
You knew what you had to do. Let's go back a little bit to child actors and what they have gone through. I was just looking at a list of child actors who actually have sued their parents. Now, we talked about Jackie Coogan,
mm-hmm.
one of the very first child actors back in the 20s and 30s. There's also Macaulay Culkin,
yes.
Gary Coleman,
yes.
Misha Barton. In fact, if I remember Gary Coleman's case, he said that there was no money left, and he made millions and millions and millions, and it was gone. Is there really any recourse for these child actors when their parents live high on the hog while the kid is working under these hot lights? Anything that can really be done?
There really isn't. Understand that even though there is the Coogan Law here in California, it only covers the money they set aside. Children are the property of their parents. Let me tell you the law we changed here in California. The parents of
okay.
a working child, this is a quote now, the parents of a working child are entitled to its custody, income, and services. And Gary Coleman's mother said the very same thing that Jackie Coogan's mother said in court. Your Honor, you cannot steal what already belongs to you.
Oh, good Lord.
It's
oh,
a myth
awful.
That children are protected. Although we, former Kid Stars, were able to effect significant changes in California, which needs to be duplicated across the country. We still got about 16 states to go, but that's been our mission. And it's not just for us. This isn't about getting our childhoods back, because that won't happen. But it's for the 800,000 children who are picking our crops who are also exempt from federal child labor law. This can be fixed with the stroke of a pen. But I've gone through 4 presidents, and none of them have done it. Neither of the Bushes, neither the Clinton, nor President Obama.
That is unconscionable. That's terrible. They absolutely
that is correct.
Should do that.
That tells you the power. That tells you of the power of the producers' associations, of the Motion Picture Council, of the AMPTP. There are powerful forces that like being able to exploit children. Tricia, I know people hate hearing me when I get off on my soapbox, but listen to this. 5.5
okay.
million children go to work every day in America. And around the world, 150 million children are working every day, some in coal mines, some as child soldiers. They're picking our chocolate. God, we are not the people we think we are.
And you bring up the great point about not just child actors, but children working in the fields and
absolutely. When you hear
like
the
said,
story,
picking...
when you hear about kids being rescued from rug making factories in India, those are real children. And yet, at the same time that we fight so hard to rescue them, here comes a movie called Slumdog Millionaire, in which the children who were hired right out of the ghetto, the Mumbai ghetto, after they were done with him, they sent him right back to the ghetto. And it was so bad that the father of the young girl in the movie actually tried to sell her, to a Dubai potentate for $400,000. It's going on right under our noses right now. When you hear about a million children involved in the sex trade, it's real.
Mm-hmm. Don't you feel overwhelmed? I feel like I want to go to bed, go to sleep.
No. You deal with this one person at a time, one opportunity at a time. And while Aaron Moran's death is a great tragedy, it does open the door once again for this discussion to get kicked off. So people will understand there will be an endless supply of Aaron Morans unless we step in, change the rules, and alter the circumstances and get these famous youngsters and working youngsters to focus on their future.
How do we, as in people like me and Bessie and the people on Web Sleuth, how do we do something to help?
Well, I can say that the institutional man in me says, well, you can make donations too. You know, we're a 501c3 too. But the truth of the matter is,
that's a great idea.
We have to change our hearts. We have to change our hearts and stop making such a big deal about a high-profile kid. It turns out badly. Look at Miley Cyrus. Holy cow. I mean, but we caused it. We caused it. How do we do that? By giving our kids the money to go to see her concerts when we should have been saying, no, you're not going to behave like that girl twerking on a dance pole.
It is just, and here she was, Hannah Montana, as clean and beautiful and perfect as any child could be, and boy, did she let loose. She got rid of Montana pretty fast.
There was Britney Spears. There was Lindsay Lohan. Look, the psychology is so simple and easy to understand, Tricia. When you become famous as, say, a 14 or 15-year-old girl and your audience is squeaky clean and juvenile, you end up hating them. You don't want to be around those little kids that love you. You want to strike out on your own and show everybody these new breasts that you've grown and those hormones that are running around in your body. And the next thing you know, unless you have very strong parents, you're off the deep end.
Like Justin Bieber, I have heard that he is incredibly difficult to work with, and he is just another kid who did well in the beginning and was surrounded by fame and fortune and people saying, yes, sir, when he was 12.
Come around and listen to us. His management team was out of Atlanta, Georgia. Scooter knows nothing about the consequences of early fame. And if they won't listen to us, they won't listen to us. You know, same with Macaulay Culkin. We were warned people over and over and over. They just won't listen. Oh, we know better than you. We're smarter than any stage parents that have ever been.
Now, let's talk about Macaulay Culkin. His father was just a monster. I believe he was in, was it Richie Rich or one of the movies? He actually got kicked off of the set because he was so demanding and obnoxious. When you say
he was a failed actor, you know.
Right, and so he was living
you
his life
for that.
Fun.
Yeah,
that's just awful. But when you say you tried it with Macaulay Culkin, you tried to warn people, tell us step by step what exactly that means. Who are you warning? What are you saying? And what can you do at that point?
Well, all you can do is try to give advice first and foremost to the parents, because they're in 50% of the instances, it's the parents who are most at fault because they're supposed to protect their child, not exploit them. But failing the parents, you try to get to the producers and hope that they will listen. I can't tell you, after doing this for so many decades, how many producers have come to me in the here and now, in the 2017, with tears in their eyes saying, why didn't I listen to you? Or how many parents over the years have come to me, why didn't I listen to you? Now my child is dead. Well, it's difficult. It's hard to be a prophet in your own time. But we know this field. We understand. We've been there. Who else are you going to listen to? In Macaulay Culkin's case, it got even more. Well, you hope for that, too. But guess what? Directors are, you know, they're workaday hires, and they forget often that the young actor that's in front of them is actually a child. They forget it. They really do. And I could go on.
Oh, and I want you to, please. But I want to be a bit more specific, please. You see Macaulay Culkin. You see that there's problems. You reach out to his parents, and his parents say, what?
Well, we don't listen to you because you've never been famous like Macaulay Culkin. I'm thinking to myself, exactly what does it mean? He's been in two movies, and I was on a television show for 8 years, and I don't understand.
Very tough.
The problem with Macaulay came early, by age 16, when he was already almost unemployable. And he was taken into New York surrogate court by his parents, who demanded that his savings account be used to support them. And the judge, Judge Saxe, S-A-X-E, ended up agreeing with the parents under this reasoning that it was wrong for Macaulay to be so famous and successful, and his parents would have to live without the 5 apartments they had in one building in New York. And Macaulay was ordered out of his trust fund to pay his parents and siblings $350,000 a year. Ordered by the court.
You know what? This sounds like a fairy tale. I can't believe this. And does he
but
still
that
have
is
to pay
what
it to
happened.
Pay?
Does he and
have to
he didn't have
I
to pay.
Oh,
now, there is also a principle. Well, of course. And even someone who has survived, thank God, someone like Leanne Rimes, who tried to sue to get out of her contract with the record company, and the court down in Texas refused to abrogate the contract because they said it had already been court approved. She was 12 years old when that was signed. The law is absurd. And you know, there was a reason back in the Middle Ages, in the days of royalty, that kings and sovereigns were given the right to free a child from bondage. The process is called emancipation. And that principle still exists in law. And whenever we see abuse, that is one of the sticks that we carry in our armament, is that, look, you know, we can go to court. And what's funny is if we can get to court, we're successful. I had to be the person here in Southern California to stop Octomom. You remember her, Nadja Suleiman?
Oh, the, who could forget
the
her?
The octuplets.
So what did you do with her?
I ended up in Superior Court to prevent her from selling her children into a television show. And the court agreed with me. But isn't it funny? It wasn't the Department of Social Services or the theatrical unions or the Department of Labor who went to bat for these children. It was me.
That's ironic and absolutely a rotten example of how the system is failing these children. I don't know if you can answer this question. And if you can't, I'll move on. We're talking with Paul Peterson. Paul is one of the creators who built A Minor Consideration, and Paul spends his days and nights helping child actors to get into the world and have a decent life after their acting career is over, or even during their acting career. And Paul, I want to ask you, what is the saddest case that you can think of a parent abusing a child for money?
Oh, there are so many. I have a friend, Mimi Gibson. She and I were brother and sister in the movie Houseboat with Cary Grant and Sophia Loren. And Mimi tells the story that when she turned 18 and asked to see her money, her mother said, "Well, honey, you supported the family." And Mimi that very day packed her few belongings and left, figuring, if I have to be working, I'm going to work for myself. I've had kids on a series who looked at their father and said, I want to go back to school. I want to be with my high school friends. And their father said, oh, you can quit the series, but we'll lose the house. I've heard some
stories.
What a
terrible burden to put on a child.
To say that
are you allowed to
a 14-year-old?
Oh, that
a
14-year-old
girl.
Are you allowed to say who, or would you rather not?
I'd rather not. I'm trying to think. Well, I can tell you who is Mary McDonough. From the Waltons.
There's
an interesting career. She went on one audition for Walton's Mountain, the movie, and ended up 9 years on a series.
On a series about a good, wholesome family, and her father says, well, we'll lose the house. What a horrible.
Terrible.
Would mess up their subconscious to no end.
Well,
okay,
and the darn near did, but Mary, she triumphed over this.
She's doing very well, from what I understand, correct?
Yes, and she's still drop-dead gorgeous.
Oh, yeah, she's a beautiful lady. Okay,
yeah.
Paul, I'm going to ask you some questions that are just kind of my groupie. I want to know behind-the-scenes stuff, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
Thank you. One of the people I'm very interested in, because I'm into true crime, is Bob Crane. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie about his life, and it just left my mind. It was a great movie. It had Greg Kinnear in it. He played Bob Crane. Very dark, dark autofocus. Anyway, he was also on the Donna Reed Show. Now, in the movie, it suggests that Bob Crane, showed these naked pictures of women that he kept taking. He had a notebook or a big photo album. And that he showed these pictures to Donna Reed. She ran out crying. Have you ever heard that? And what was he like on the set? Was he a nice guy, jerk? What was the deal?
He was a complete and utter jerk who was always trying to hit on my girlfriends. I really didn't like him then. I have not an ounce of sympathy for him. He tried to treat Donna badly, and she was the boss. I liked the sheriff in Arizona when he found out about Bob's extensive pornographic collection and his ongoing blackmail of the married women that he had sex with and videotaped. He said to the press, this is one murder I don't want to solve.
So, okay, this is kind of new. Maybe I don't know as much as I thought I did. He would blackmail the women for money?
That is correct, especially the married ones.
Oh, what a scumbag. Oh, gee.
Yeah, that is correct.
About
as low as you can go.
That is as low as you can go.
They're still lower. There are those people who do these ugly things with children. I'm not accusing Bob Crane of that, but, you know, pedophilia is rampant in this country, and it cuts across all socioeconomic levels of our society, all races, all creeds, and it's ugly. And, frankly, I like the old West solution. You know, it was a big, wide country, and people who abused children in that manner, they were taken out to the desert and never seen again.
That's fine with me. Well, even Corey Feldman, I'm going back to Corey again, who also sued his father, he said he was molested. And he has claimed that there are these, you know, big parties where these kids get passed around. And that sounds fake, but do you think that is a legit, that possibly could be that there are actually parties?
Of course it's true.
Big, powerful
of course
people
it's true.
That are
they have pictures
passing
the
kids
of it.
Around?
We have young boys on Melrose Avenue. The boys are on Melrose and the girls are on Santa Monica Boulevard. And we call them chickens. And they are rounded up and brought to these parties at the homes of very prominent Hollywood people where the whole thing is their sex parties. There have been pictures posted of this and people convicted.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that people have been convicted. But don't you get up at sometimes and just, like I said earlier, feel overwhelmed or just kind of, I don't know, like can we keep doing this? It's just so much. There's so much that needs to be done.
Well, indeed there is. But I do have faith in this culture. We've got to get back to exacting the full measure of legal process. And, you know, when you live in a state like California and there are more than 700 people sitting on death row and have been for the last 20-odd years, and it costs $1 million per person to keep them, I keep saying, what are we doing to ourselves? What are we doing?
Mm-hmm. You are absolutely right. You need to run for president. That's the solution right there. I figured it out now, Paul. You're the guy. Paul Peterson, what advice would you give to parents who are looking to get their children into showbiz? Like, here in Utah, it's a very big state for filming. They film Touched by an Angel here. They film all the time,
yep,
in southern Utah. And they're always having auditions for children. I thought about taking my son because, of course, I thought he was the most adorable child. And then I didn't because I thought, I don't want to get wrapped up in that. But let's just say somebody does have a kid who's talented and they start in on showbiz and they start climbing to the top. What advice do you give to these parents?
Well, first of all, educate yourself. Don't listen to other stage parents. Ask the people who have been there. If your child is truly talented, their third grade and fourth grade friends will let you know. If you got the best singer in school, you got the best singer. If the kids tell you you got the best baseball player in school, you got the best baseball player. But if you start pushing them, if you demand that they get into ever deeper water, you're asking for trouble. You're asking for trouble. You know, Hollywood is a big pond. This is not for small fish. You better be real good before you try to crack this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it will definitely. They don't hold back during those auditions, do they?
Not
and
at
I
all.
Can imagine
you know,
a lot of.
You know, when a kid
goes
on an audition, the parents drive them to the audition, but at the end of the day, the kids go into that audition room by themselves, and you don't know what happens in there. And that's, oh, it's just awful. Why a parent would drive to an audition and walk into a room with 100 other kids just as cute, and in most cases very talented, and then endure that for 2 hours? I don't get it. What a waste of a parent's time.
What happens behind those closed doors? You say it's just awful. Give us some examples.
Well, it can be. Well, it can be from young girls, 14, 15 years old. You know, you have to wear a swimsuit in this, so take off your blouse and your pants. That's how blunt it can be. Or it can be a highly emotional scene you're asked to do with an adult male hovering over you, touching you, groping you while you play a scene. I mean, it's awful. Also, they don't much care about your feelings. You've seen the Broadway auditions where you walk out on stage with your music and the piano player starts the music. You get four bars into your song and a voice in the darkness says, thank you, next.
Right.
That's
just brutal.
How blunt
that's
it is.
Just,
oh, of course.
Believe it as an adult, let alone a kid.
Exactly.
What about Ron
it
Howard?
Ruins lives.
What if, it does, but what about Ron Howard? Look at how good he turned out. Is that all to
well,
his parents?
Well, that's because
credit?
Of his father. It's his mom and dad. Rance and Gene were two of the best show business parents you could imagine. I'll give you a story. And Ron shared, Rance shared this with us at one of our conferences. Ron was started to make noises about not going on to college, and at the family dinner table, Rance thumped the table and said, young man, you have been promising people in America since you were 3 years old that you were only working so you could go to college, so you will, by God, go to college. It's a true story. So, of course, all
and
Ron did, and yeah, mind you, he was with the full support of Henry Winkler, who was a graduate of Yale's Fine Arts Department. Ron went to USC, graduated at the top of his class, and the only other student film that was ever better was by Steven Spielberg.
Oh,
Ron worked
right.
his butt
it
off to get where he was, where he is.
He is, and he is. He is what he appears, to be just a down-to-earth, nice guy, His parents, you're right, they just have to be the best parents in the world. What's interesting, little side note, Ron Howard looks exactly like his mother, and his brother looks exactly like his dad. They don't look like brothers at all. But if you look at their parents, they have the genes of each parent. It's pretty amazing. Well,
it is.
Paul,
I'll tell you another interesting thing about Ron's parents.
Sure.
Despite the success of both boys, remember, Clint was doing a series before Ron did a series. They never moved from the family home. And those boys grew up with neighborhood chums and kids they went to school with. And the parents never, never took the Hollywood route because they were workaday people in Hollywood. And they were well-grounded, and boy, does it show.
That is a perfect example of what to do if you are going to try and get your kids into Hollywood. But they unfortunately are the exception, it seems like, and that's what's very tragic. Okay, Paul, I want to help you any way I can. Give us the address of your website, where we can make the donations. Any of your books, is the 1977 book still available? Let's start from there.
Yes.
Start with your website.
Well, let's start there. Yes, Walt, Mickey, and Me is the name of the book, and that's available at Amazon. And I suggest people read that because that's a gentle look at one of the best situations a kid could have ever been in, despite the fact I was fired. There were decent people, and they still are. A minor consideration can be found on the Internet. We are a 501c3, a minor consideration, .org. And it's currently in the capable hands of about 200 younger former kid stars. You know, I've been doing this so long, I'm kind of semi-retired. They kicked me upstairs. I'm now a chairman.
Ah, there you go. You're at the top, but you're semi-retired still.
That's an easy way to find me. We, of course, we have a presence on Facebook, AMC. A minor consideration. All of us have Facebook pages. I think I have five, I think, altogether with a minor consideration. But all the kids maintain a high social media presence. So we're real easy to find.
Okay. Well, I would encourage everybody, just think if a couple of thousand people gave $5 a piece, that would be a nice chunk of money for you, Paul. So we'll put the link up on WebSleuth and we will continue to promote your site. And, Paul, if you ever need anything from Web Sleuth, we have just an army of people that know how to sleuth things that are here to help. So do not ever hesitate to ask.
Thank
okay?
you. Thank you. That's very, very kind of you. And I hope I didn't talk everybody's ear off. You know, I just have this tendency.
I get up
on my platform and just get going.
Paul, it was wonderful. I could keep going for another 2 hours. I just don't want to wear you out. But I know you are a perfect guest. I mean, the perfect guest is when I hardly talk, and so this was great. You told all stories and gave us all the information.
You know, I had that same experience for about 8 years out here. I hosted a television show for seniors called Aging Well. And my favorite guests were the ones where I would ask one question and then kind of settle back and just listen.
That's it. And you are that perfect guest. Don't ever change.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. We'll be in touch, okay? Thanks for joining us today on Web Sleuth Radio. I really appreciate it. Take care,
guys. The pleasure was mine.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. I want to find out all the backstories. You know, I'm just one of those rotten people that likes to hear what goes on with Hollywood. Bessie, are you still with me, my dear? I think you are. What a guy. He is so nice. And when I say there are people on his Facebook page that are bombarding him with questions, and he always takes the time to answer them. He's never rude. He's always kind. Paul Peterson, I'm sure everybody that watched the Donna Reed Show, at least the females, and perhaps the gay men, loved Jeffree Stone. He was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And he obviously had a very good upbringing. He was very, very grounded. Bessie, what did you think? Are you there? Uh-oh. I see you here, but I do not hear you. I think you're on mute. Did you mute yourself?
I am.
I hate that. There you
I
are.
Did.
Okay, what did you think, my dear?
No, I was just going to say, like you, you know, I had a major crush on Jeff when I was young, when I was a kid. But way beyond that, he's just, I've always been impressed by him, and I've, you know, seen him on television shows quite often. I haven't read any of his books, I have to confess, but now I'm curious. But I know, you know, I'm familiar with the work he's done for young actors. And, yeah, I could have listened to him for another hour or two. What he's saying is so true, and some of it was shocking. And it made me realize that while laws protect kids in California, there are so many studios like here, you know, in Louisiana. We have Hollywood South, and we have so many child
actors. New York City. Look at New York
and
City.
Of course, New York, yeah. And I think he mentioned North Carolina. And, you know, I'm thinking of some other states where the movie industry has moved in because of tax credits. And so there are a lot of young, you know, working actors. They are not big stars like Macaulay Culkin, but they're still working, you know, minors. And I'm really interested now to find out, at least in Louisiana, what the laws are for working minors in the film industry. It's not something I really had ever given thought to. And then about auditions. I mean, as an adult, I've been on enough auditions to know how grueling they can be. So, yeah, I do sympathize with kids going into those auditions alone. Oh, my God.
Brutal. And
they
what about Macaulay Culkin?
It can be brutal.
Oh, my gosh. The judge ordering him to pay his family $350,000 a year? That's just ludicrous. I mean, and
yeah,
I remember
reading that. That is ludicrous.
It is.
Well, I mean, that kid worked very, very hard. You know what I did like to have asked him? Macaulay Culkin has a brother, correct? Mm-hmm. That was also an actor?
Yes,
I can't think of his first name.
Yeah, he was in the movie, I think it's Kerry McCulkin or something like that. He was in the movie with Mel Gibson about the aliens and the crop circles.
What
was it called?
Yeah.
Gosh, it's going to drive me nuts now. I have to look it up. Anyway, I'll look up his name. But, yeah, he looks exactly like it. Now, he also had a sister. He had a sister that was hit by a car and killed, and she was an actress, too. So,
well,
do you remember that?
Wonder what was this. What? No, I don't remember the sister being killed, but I know about the brother, and I just wondered, you know, well, what was the situation with him? You know, I mean, he made some money too, and how was he treated?
Right.
Or was he already? He was still a child, right? He was still a minor.
Rory Culkin. Rory Culkin is his name, and it was the movie Signs in 2002. That was his big movie. He's been in a bunch of others as well. And did he have to pay money to his family?
Just wondering how that was treated.
He certainly wasn't as big as his brother, but that is just really bad. And then the River Phoenix family, that's another one.
Gosh,
they lived in a hippie commune.
The
way you hear about it. And River Phoenix, the guy who, the great actor, so talented, died of a heroin overdose in front of his little brother, Joaquin. And just tragedy after tragedy. And I don't know, it's very, very sad and tragic. And speaking of crime, it is a crime to abuse a child, people. And this, what Paul Peterson has been talking about, is child abuse. Don't think just because somebody isn't beaten and has a black eye, there are all kinds of child abuse, and making a child work who's 8 or 9 years old to provide for the family, my God, that is child abuse. And it needs to stop. And the thing that I love, Bessie, about Paul Peterson is the work that he's doing with a minor consideration. He gets up every morning and reaches out to people. And he's just amazing, isn't he?
He is amazing, and I love the fact that he said, you know, there's like no limit to rehab, or there is a limit, you know. Huh? And I understood what he meant about Ron Howard and Henry Winkler, you know, people trying to help to give Aaron or Dana Plato, or, you know, to give them a chance, give them a part. But if they were suffering from an addiction at the time, were unreliable, couldn't do the part. I mean, you can only help somebody so many times. But he said that the you know, one case he knows of, I mean, that they've given somebody a chance after 7 times in rehab, they still answer the phone for that person. So, boy, is that dedication.
That's,
you know,
dedicated. And that is a man with a heart and a group with a heart, right?
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, that's compassion. Compassion beyond the pale. Yeah.
Exactly. Let's talk about something that probably will have no compassion and will keep us hopping continually, and that is our brand new forum. The forum is not moderated, people. It's where you go to vent about politics. It's called PolitiVent. And Bessie is in charge of it. It's getting going. It's slowly getting going. I think people maybe are a little shy to go in there because on Web Sleuth we're so rigid. You know, we really moderate those forums. I mean, we are on top of it. This is a whole different animal. It would be impossible to moderate a forum like this. You couldn't do it because if one person says this, then you got to allow the other person. It's just back and forth. The only rule we have, why don't you tell us the rules, Bessie? They're very few.
Well, they're very few. You know, no name calling. Naturally, you know, you can disagree, but just keep some courtesy and respect and don't start calling people, you know, you're an idiot or a dimwit or a moron or your idea is moronic, you know, where did you go to school, you know, those kinds of comments. Leave that out and you'll be fine. And, you know, don't come up with any crazy conspiracy theories.
No
theories.
Pizzagate, people.
No Pizzagate. And, you know, Hillary's not a murderer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know,
and
Bill didn't kill girls and all of that.
Yeah. You know, so some of those crazy theories, leave them out. So we just ask people to just, you know, talk about reasonable talk about current events in a reasonable manner. You can use blogs as a source, but again, reasonable blogs. Anything that's too outrageous is going to be nixed real quickly. We're not going to answer alerts for people squabbling because, you know, she made fun of me being a liberal and, you know, I don't like it. Like today, somebody said something about, oh, certain conservatives should go to re-education camps. And it was said in a sarcastic, joking way. And then another person came up and said, well, I think all liberals should go to re-education camps. And the first person responded, oops, or you know, oh, my, or something like that. But it was in jest. You know, and you know that kind of thing is fine.
We'll
it's going to happen
on Web Sleuth, right? Web Sleuth, we would not allow that. In PolitiVent, we will absolutely. And just don't get your little feelings hurt. We're not going to protect you, people, right, Bessie? We're not going to hover.
No,
and
we're not
them
answering
like
alerts. That's it. Think maybe, you know, it's off to a rather slow start, but I mean, it hasn't even been open 24 hours yet, so we're going to see.
It will take a little time,
and I think some people might be a little, you know, it's a little daunting because we don't have these strict moderation rules. So some people are a little afraid of getting in there and getting their feelings hurt. But we know that there are a lot of members who've requested a forum like this. And who are interested in politics, and they do want to vent, and they want to discuss the issues. you know, without being really attacked.
Right.
Like, and that's so where the name calling.
Right. The no name calling is what's going to really be the big thing. If you can't call someone a name or tell them their idea is stupid, that your insults are gone. And so that's why I felt that rule, that Bessie and I came up with, that rule is a good, solid rule. You know, you can get in there and make jokes about liberals and about conservatives and all of that. Vent. We want you to vent. But, you know, just be reasonable. That's the only – it's so simple. Bessie,
it is.
Have we had any, like, major blow-ups or any problems in there in PolitEvent yet?
Not yet.
No? Good. Not yet. Not yet.
I haven't checked in a couple of hours since, you know, we've been getting ready for, the show.
Could be a complete meltdown mode for all we know.
Yeah.
But I doubt it.
But no, I don't think so. I think it's going to be fine.
You can find it just by going to websleuth.com. Look in the upper left-hand corner. You'll see a box that says, what the heck does it say? Trending stories. And you'll see, I believe in the middle, is Uncle Sam holding a Republican and holding a Democrat and squeezing them both with, like, steam coming out of his ears. And you click on that, and that takes you to PolitEvent, where we want PoliticVent, where we want you to vent all of your politics in a reasonable manner. Please, people, we're here to help. We want to take the stress out of your life so you can vent on WebSleuth and go home and be happy. Right, Bessie?
Right. Right, and we also have another sub form under there called "It Ought to Be a Law," and there that can just be fun. It can be serious, and you can just, you know, we all think at some time, man, there ought to be a law, you know, and so you can have fun with it or post, you know, a serious idea, but it's another good way to be able to vent.
Right.
Yeah.
There ought to be a law
that
says child actors, you know, should be protected. There ought to be a law that my ex-husband should just give me money. You know,
yeah,
whatever.
Or my neighbors can't cut their grass before, you know, 10 a.m.
Right. There ought to be a law. So it's just a place to have fun, to vent, and, again, not moderated. So we're just letting you go. We've never done this before. Well, we have done it, but it wasn't with a political forum. And we're gonna wait and see how this goes. But it's like Bessie said, it's slowly catching on. It's getting busier and busier. It hasn't been 24 hours yet, so I have a feeling, Bessie, I have a feeling it's going to really pick up and be probably our most active forum on WebSleuth. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. Judging by what I've seen on the rest of the web. I'd be surprised if it isn't.
Right. It's going to be good. You know. So we do have an email if you have a problem that you really want to discuss with somebody, and it's easy. Now I can't remember how to spell it. Do you remember how to spell it, Bessie?
PolitEvent, PolitEvent@gmail.com.
That's right. So
PolitEvent.
There you go. PolitEvent at gmail.com. That's if there's really something bugging you and you just don't like something or whatever. Send us an email. We'll do our best. Bessie, my dear, thank you again for doing all the heavy lifting. I truly appreciate you. And you have a great night, my dear, okay?
Yeah, all right. You too, Tricia. Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks, everybody. We'll be back next week with another edition of WebSleuth Radio. Don't forget, PolitEvent. Come and vent. Feel better. You'll be healthier for it. Good night, everybody. Take care now. Bye-bye.